So welcome to the Remedies for the Dyslexic Reader. Our takeaway for today is two words. Actually, oops, I'm dyslexic. There's three. Work on it. I could stop right there and we're done. You're dismissed. Let me go back. There is no easy remedy. There is no silver bullet. There's a man named Lester, who was some type of slow learner. I'm not exactly sure what his malady was. However, he graduated from school with a basic understanding of life and began working in a business where he could do repetitive jobs, such as sweeping the floor, going to get the mail, cleaning the bathroom, and so on. And as long as someone instructed him, he would consistently go get the mail. You would tell him, Lester, go get the mail. Go get the mail. Lester, sweep the floor. Lester would sweep the floor. Lester, go clean the bathroom. Lester would go clean the bathroom. This went on for 13 years. Till finally one day, the boss was there sipping his root beer. And he saw Lester walking out across the parking lot going to get the mail. The root beer went up his nose. 13 years of teaching. And Lester finally got it. From that day on, Lester got the mail every single day for the next 25 years. Was a 13-year investment worth it? It's easy to see that now, right? But it's not hard. I mean, it's not easy. Well, you're the one who's at about year 11 and your patience is running out. Again, there are no silver bullets. But there are ways to teach these children. Somehow they learned everything that they know by the time they get to you. And if you can discover how that happened, how did this child learn how to talk? How did they learn how to walk? How did they learn whatever it is they know? That can be a key to help you unlock how to teach them. I do not intend to answer every possible scenario that can happen with slow students, dyslexic students, students with fetal alcohol syndrome, or rapid attachment disorder, or whatever other three-digit letter code you have in your classroom. We'll try to give some broad overarching principles and answer some. However, on the back of your handout, very bravely put my phone number and my email address, as well as Peter Witt's phone number and email address. We both do phone consultations. We do not profess to be able to answer give a solution to every problem, but we'll try the Lord's help. Listen to the Apostle Paul, 1 Corinthians 9, verse 19 to 22. For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. And unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without the law, as without the law, that I might gain them that are without the law. To the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. Are you willing to be a servant unto all? To be made all things to all men? To use all means to teach some? If you're willing to seek for the way, you can find it. Somehow they have learned all the things that they know already. But you will have to, or take away,
work on it.
To become productive citizens, these students need to learn how to deal with real life. We must
work on it
to develop coping mechanisms that can enable these children to use the talents God has given them to perform His work in His kingdom. In the first session, we observed that we are created in the image of God, for his glory, and that God has given each child unique characteristics that help us understand his character. Yesterday evening, we looked at some real-life examples and hopefully learned a few things from them. In this session, we will look at the methods of teaching that can reach these unique minds. Listen to this little story and watch the teacher and student work on it. This is called the Higgledy-Piggledy Pigeon. If you're sitting in the back, sorry about your luck. A young pigeon named Hank, a beginner in rank, began his first day of flight school. Like his father before, he was ready to soar, and in his flight cap, he looked cool.
"We have taught the best," the teacher professed. "Now it's time to see what you can do, like Sir Isaac Pigeon and Leonardo the Pigeon. There's potential in each one of you."
They checked understanding of takeoff and landing, and the students were measured and scored. Each test was a breeze, and Hank finished with ease and was perched for the Pidgey Award. Hank was feeling delight about his first solo flight, as each student was given a task. He must deliver a note that his teacher wrote and then find his way back to the class. With goggles and cap, his assignment and map, Hank quickly took off on his flight. Though the class headed east, he went off to the west, 'cause he couldn't tell left from the, right. With his map upside down, Hank looked all around and was puzzled on which way to fly. He would go to the left when he should have gone right. He was just about ready to cry. When nothing looked right at each leg of his flight, Hank figured he must be off course. He did not want to ask, but to finish his task, he stopped to get help from a horse.
"Pardon me, horse, but I can't find my course. Can you please tell me where I should go?
Since day after day, in this pasture I stay, I'm sorry to say, I don't know."
Then he asked a large snail who was oozing a trail,
"Can you please tell me what trail to make?"
"I take many days just to go a short ways. So your guidance I can't undertake."
A raccoon overheard and chimed in with a word.
"For your cap, I can show you the route."
Already delayed, he agreed to the trade and was shown a straightforward way out. With a worn, tattered map and missing his cap, he arrived almost 2 hours late. The class snickered and stared because he had erred. He was ready to quit from heartbreak. The teacher took him aside and told him with pride,
"Don't be sad because some things are hard. Though you had a rough start, you have talent and heart."
And proceeded to read his scorecard.
"Your takeoff and landing were truly outstanding, and for which you received a high score, and your altimeter reading and speed of proceeding will shorten delivery chores. But your sense of direction could use some correction. And though you have failed on this score, with hard work on your side and a compass to guide to the head of your class, you can soar."
With a compass to use, there was no time to lose. So Hank practiced the rest of the day. By final inspections, he had learned his directions and completed the class with an A. Did you notice the things that that teacher did to help the student succeed? Anyone? She praised what he did do right.
Pointed out what he did wrong.
She pointed out what he did wrong. He already knew. But she probably narrowed it down to something that maybe didn't sound quite so bad as I was a total failure.
She took him aside.
She took him aside. Why? Please.
I think often when we feel like a failure, we get the mind picture that everybody thinks we're a failure.
Yes.
And so when we're told in front of everybody what we did, how we could have improved it, sometimes doesn't feel that great.
Exactly. So
probably most times.
Yes. Being told in front of everyone can just add the weight to that sense of failure. She did one other thing.
Gave him what he needed to
succeed. She gave him a tool. And in this case, it was something very simple. There was a lot of perception, though, involved in her understanding that if he can't tell right and left, he needs something that can't change. And the compass was that. Here again, if we can figure out how these children have learned what they know, that's the key you can stick in the door. Encourage. Point the student to what they did right. Give them a hook, a handle, something. Notice also that the student experienced public failure. This is something that is bound to happen when teaching slow students. Be charitable. Thank you, Jonathan, for what you shared there. Your other students will likely respond to those embarrassing moments just like you do. Show them how to do it. Toddlers discover the world around them through their five senses. My youngest daughter enjoys exploring the world around her. When she sees something interesting, she touches it, shakes it to see if it makes any noise, brings it up close for the sniff test, and if it's she's given the opportunity, she'll try to see how it tastes. Yet our education system tries to break the God-given process by forcing students to learn abstract concepts through looking and listening, cutting the student's learning potential by 60%. Does that sound intelligent to you? This flat, black and white method, please note the inside of this book. To a 2-year-old, does that look interesting? How about that? The main difference being?
Color.
Not simple. While this flat black and white method works for about 80% of our students, even those students benefit from structured, positive, multi-sensory instruction. You see, it seems that our minds could more easily contain a bunch of little facts than big pictures and stories. Yet the opposite is true. The larger a memory and the more the memory connects with other memories, the better the memory sticks. Take Jesus' teaching, for example. The Bible says, without parables, he spake not unto them. Use stories. Let's take stock of some of his other methods. Can you think of a time that he used food or drink to teach a lesson?
Changing water into wine.
Thank you.
Five loaves and two fishes.
Same.
Or seven loaves.
Very good. We'll keep going. There's more. Think about that. How about a physical object? Did Jesus ever use a physical object to teach a lesson? That's simple. How many of us don't have pennies, right? What about odors? Did Jesus ever use a smell to teach somebody? Thank you. That's the most obvious one, the ointment that Mary used. How about when he raised Lazarus from the dead? What was Martha's objection? He stinketh. He called the Pharisees whited sepulchers. I don't care what color you paint a sepulcher. How do you think it smells? Right. So don't try to break Jesus' model of using five senses. You're not alone in loving and wanting to help slow students. The students' parents, your school board, curriculum publishers, and of course, other teachers care about these children and long for each of them to experience the joys of learning new abilities. Surround yourself with a support group, work together with family members, and ask God for wisdom, patience, and His blessing. Because after all our efforts and bright ideas are tested, we are still planting or watering that which someone else has planted. And it's God who gives the increase. My first main point here is that their teaching needs to be structured. This is so important. And yet, like I hope you noticed in a few of the stories I told last night, we tend to miss it. One of the first things that needs to happen in these situations is that we need to take the stress out of the situation. Often teachers who are teaching slow students feel very frustrated. And guess what? The students feel frustrated too. My younger sister was told by her teacher that, "I don't know how else to teach you." And she sat there and thought, "Yeah, I know. You're not teaching me." And they were both mad. And she didn't learn in that situation. We have to take the stress out of the situation. How do we do that? Involve others. Just recently, the Christian School Builder had a story called The Calculator in it. And it's a wonderful story about a teacher and the parents and the school board working together to solve a problem of a slow learning student. Come right up front here if y'all don't mind. So use the parents. Communicate what you think your goals for them are. And talk about what you're facing at school. Work together with them. I have yet to talk to a group of parents and say, "This is what I'm facing at school with this student," and not have them say, "Yeah, dealing with that at home too." But don't try what the teacher who was teaching Aiden's son tried, where she thought she had it all figured out, and all she did was made an enemy. I'm so glad that that was resolved. I'm so happy that he was willing to reconcile that situation. But that situation went nowhere until they both gave in and were willing to talk. The board. School boards may not be overly qualified to give you technical advice. That's okay. They still need to know what's going on. Let them know about the progress the student is or isn't making. Let them know if you are feeling frustrated. They may know about someone that you don't. And they are excellent, actually, usually, at giving you long-term goals. With the girl, Emily, that I spoke briefly about last night, the board did have long-term goals, and I missed them. But I still look back and think about what they told me at the beginning of that year every time I'm teaching a slow student. But they don't have to get through a whole grade this year, but can we just see some progress? That's what we're looking for. Think about that man, Lester. School boards are good at those long term. We've been working with him. We've done this for 11 years and he's still doing it. God, you never know. We had a student in our school who had an attention span problem. He's extremely intelligent. And we worked with that for 4 years. Not long ago, he was able to complete all his assignments in one day without motivational help from the teacher. And we cheered. It was a red letter day. Today, he has actually raced with his classmate. Something that I thought would never happen. But he did it. And won. Manage their workload. Everyone is different. So this is okay. This is a concept that I believe every teacher should state the first day of school. The children already know that it's true. The idea that treating everyone fairly is giving everyone the same amount of work is a lie. So, just say, everyone in this room is different. We are each unique. God made us just the way we are. I reserve the right to give Miss Krista more work than I do Vernie. As long as they're both working and they're both doing their best. That's what I want to see from you. And I want you to be okay with that too. You know what? The children are fine with it. They know who's slow and who's fast in the classroom. You're not surprising them. Focus on progress. And rejoice when that slow student can finally take another class. Or can finally do the whole math lesson. Praise them. I've had fast students get all excited because the slow student did the whole lesson too. That is wonderful. Schedule their work in increments. Give them the next step rather than saying, do your English. Say, why don't you do the first five problems in part eight and I'll check on you in 10 minutes. Aquila Martin calls it catch and release teaching. You go over there and you say, okay, Danielle, what I want you to do is write the next sentence. Be back later. All right. You walk away. She has a little job to do that she can handle. And she feels she's not being singled out for 15 minutes at a time. I just stopped by, gave her something to do, and walked away. It's beautiful. Monitor their stress level as well as your own. And in doing this, determine the student's ability by studying the student. I cannot give you, here again, there is no silver bullet for figuring out exactly how much schoolwork Brett can get done today. How do I know that he isn't daydreaming or doodling on his paper when he has it curled up like that? For all I know, he's drawing a picture of a pig. Or maybe he's thinking about a pig. While his pencil's there hovering over his paper and his book is wide open on his desk. The only way to know what a student can do is by studying them. There's an old saying that weak teachers, if I can get this right, I can't remember the first part. The second one is, good teachers study books, but the best teachers study their students. Study your students. Work at it. Discipline appropriately and be sure that your discipline is redemptive. Avoid reducing these people's recess. They need to move. Let them do it. Give them positive and negative consequences. Too often with these students, we say, if you don't do this, we're going to do that. Okay, that's okay. But say, if you don't do this, this will happen. If you do this, then this will happen. If a battery has no power if we only give one side or the other. So don't just give them Skittles if they get something right, but there's no consequence for not doing it right. Neither give them a flick with the ruler every time they don't pay attention, but never give them a Skittle for doing it right. The power is when there are positive and negative consequences. And limit the intensity of any consequence, especially with those students who have fetal alcohol syndrome. They tend to, the tendency is there for a punishment to accelerate the situation rather than resolving it. Here again, a concept from Aquila Martin. The IV method of discipline works better than a shot. In other words, you're better off walking by and flicking them on the head every 5 minutes than spanking them once a day. And go ahead and let them wiggle and act upset for 15, 20 seconds after you punish them. If it goes away and they get back in gear, let go of it. It wasn't personal. It's part of what they are struggling with. And if you're reducing the stress, if your discipline is redemptive, and if it in the long run has the desired result, It's working. Questions? Or comments?
So is it worth it for you to leave the chalkboard and the seventh grade class that you're having and walk back and bonk Sammy on the head as you're talking to the seventh grade because he's misbehaving and then just go back? That type of thing, is that what you're referring to with the small little IV style?
Yes. It can. I mean, there are times that you need to move. Other times, you may just need to say, Tyler, do I have your attention? And you just go back on. Or you say, Raymond, I want to see your pencil moving. And you go on. Those can be those. That's catch and release teaching. You can interject that into your seventh graders trying to figure out what a direct quotation is. And you ask, Micah, can you tell us what a direct quotation is? Bing, sit up straight. You got it, Micah? It's that quick. Or if I need to, he doesn't sit up straight. You wait for Micah to start talking. You walk back there and tap him on the head. And you come back. Got it yet? Yeah. It is challenging. I'm not going to try to sound like this isn't hard. And yet, as you work with it, as you get used to it, you can do it without becoming stressed out. I believe I can say that. I hope some of you have experienced that. That once it becomes the normal thing in your classroom, it doesn't feel like you're out of control. It just becomes the normal way that we do things around here. And it's okay. The seventh graders who are used to you touching that other student, they don't mind. They know that's part of the deal. They know that one is the most likely one to be taking homework home, so they're fine. It's okay. Any other questions or comments?
I had a student once, and instead of touching them or anything like that, I would just say their name. So I would use their name in a situation, right? Mm-hmm. And it worked pretty well, except that a couple of my students did not understand that, and they asked, "Why are you always picking on her?" I didn't know what to say then, because I didn't want to explain this is actually a technique
yeah.
I have.
Yeah. No, I actually do something very similar to that. So while I'm teaching seventh grade, I might say, Sammy was in town, and she said to her mother, if you would just buy me this new pair of shoes, I would never ask for another pair. Where do the quotation marks belong there? Now we've got Sammy's attention. Because I'm using her and she wants to know, am I going to say something good or bad about her? and the seventh graders are interested because this is happening to someone they know, and it's all good. So an excellent method.
And Sammy is part of the seventh grade, or she's out seventh.
No, she's the slow fourth grader who's slogging through reading or whatever at the moment, and just feeling overburdened and sweating, and just to hear her name used in a constructive way makes her feel valued. She feels like she's part of this room. She gets a break from the work and then she goes back to work. But you've let her know that you are paying attention to what she's doing. And also that she's valuable. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's extremely important to do that.
What if you are constantly reminding them gently and kindly and considerately?
And it's... And they still struggle.
Oh, yeah.
The boy that took 4 years, it was 3.5 years, that was what it felt like. Mm-hmm. I said his name, sometimes probably well over 100 times a day.
Okay. So just work on it.
Just work on it. However, if you see that not working, there were times that I said, I have reminded you 40 times today already. I counted. Do you realize that? Huh? Really? Yes! Do you think you could work for 10 minutes without me saying your name? Yeah, sure. And he did. How about tomorrow if we try 11? And that's the way it works. You keep stretching these people little by little by little. And the next thing that you know, and they know, that habit of depending on you for their motivation, they've graduated.
Okay.
And be excited in those situations when the student does work for 5 minutes without you saying your name. Make a big deal about it.
Well, they can do it because if something's going on at home in the evening, they get done.
Well, make a big deal about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I feel your pain, but work at it. Okay, we're going to go on to the next part. It needs to be positive. Romans 15, verse 7 says, "Wherefore receive ye one another, as Christ received us." If you don't read that part of the verse, it doesn't actually mean what it should mean. How did Christ receive you? Did he say, first, you must be able to read 100 words a minute, you have to know all your math facts, and... These children need to know that you accept their person, who they are, the way God made them, that you believe that they are a manifestation of God's image. And believe me, their parents are very keen as to whether you receive their children or not. I wish I could have channeled the amount of desire in Aiden's voice when he told me, "I just want a teacher next year who loves my son." And he said that, actually, I think in that conversation, he said that at least 3 times. And this was from a man who knows what it's like to be the slow guy in the classroom. And he doesn't mind that it's hard. He just wants someone who loves. Develop a growth mentality for every student. I would like to say that one of the things that we tend, where we get off the rails in working with slow students, is ignoring the fast ones. Right? Every person in your classroom can improve on some level, whether it's socially, chewing with their mouth closed, letting other people talk at lunchtime, whatever it is. Everyone can grow somehow. If you put at least a little bit of energy into touching those other students and trying to get them to grow so that the slow student realizes, oh, I'm not the only person who needs to improve around here. It can actually help everyone. When Jesus gave the parable of the talents, he was not looking for everyone to have 10 talents. He just wanted them to improve. That was all. And once again, if I didn't say it hard enough, when they do improve, let them know that you noticed. They need to know that they have pleased you when they do, even if it's a minuscule progress. If it's progress, let them know that you noticed. Often these students do have strong points that other students have as weak points. Commend these students by using them to help others. That student who can't read, but is gifted at art, let them go help the super fast student whose picture of a dog looks more like an elephant that got hit by a train. I says, yeah, could you help them draw a dog? Let them be the hero some of the time. And it might be hard to find something, but just like that girl, Emily, who had so few skills, but we played football, she got to be the hero. And you can trust me that when we played football, she was a happy girl because she could do it well. Questions regarding being positive?
Do you have tips for us to be able to see, I don't know, like, sometimes when we're in the thick of it, maybe our eyes are a little bit filmed over and it's hard for us to see the improvements and the positives.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any tips for us to break through that film and start seeing the little positives and the things that they actually excel in that we're blind to?
So I would have 2 things to say about that. First of all, one of the things that tends to frustrate us is the slowness with which they progress. Don't look for progress from one day to the next with these students, but go by weeks or maybe even months. I've had to sometimes look at I feel like I'm struggling with this person. Yesterday they did so well, today they did bad again, or poorly. But then I think about a month ago, it was way worse than this. And I go ahead and commend, because over a month's period of time, there was progress. And as far as finding that aha thing about what they're good at, you have to study these children. Sometimes, especially in the very young ones, it's not obvious. It's very hard to see what a first or second grader is really talented at. You may have to be a little creative with those things. As they get a little older, that tends to be a little more evident. You get into the fourth and fifth grade often, you can kind of tell who's good at mechanic work or woodworking or something and so on.
What do you do with self-degrading students?
You should ask that question to my wife because she's got one. But, one thing you should not do, and that is let them pull extra compliments out of you. You say, "You finally did better." "No, I didn't." Stop. That you do not need to answer that. It's unnecessary. You made your statement. They heard you. They don't need any more. You gave your positive feedback. Go on. And that can actually help slow that down a little bit. Many of these students who are self-degrading are parroting what they've heard, whether you thought they were listening or not, or what they felt implied by others. You're probably going to overcome that as much by the things you don't say, or by the things, or by the positive feedback you give them, rather than, it's one of those things that if you try to attack it head on, it's probably counterproductive. Anybody else? Is that your experience? Very good. Let's go to the good stuff. Teaching these children needs to be multi-sensory. Remember, everyone has five different gateways. Now, we'll again go over the four basic methods that people learn. So here's a wonderful set of instructions, right? How many of you just love a set of instructions for how to put a coffee table together or something? And when you get the box that has the coffee table in it, the first thing you do is grab the instructions. Wow, we have a very unique group here. So basically there are four different types of people. There are those who will just yank the pieces out of the box and start putting bolts in and see what happens. All right, they like to do something. These are the students who, when you say you may now come up to the board, they're knocking things over on the way there. All right, you have those who love to read, and they will pull the instructions out and they will very studiously read through everything. These are the ones who come to class and you're trying to tell them what the lesson is about, and they are totally bored because they already know. They read the lesson, they've got it, they understand, that's the way they learn. There are those who look at the pictures and they go, "Okay, that goes there, this goes here," so, and they don't read any of the text, but they are going to look at the pictures of everything. And then there are those annoying people who look at a picture or a set of directions and be like, "Okay, so, and what we need to do is put this in here until it clicks," and then they're constantly talking to themselves. These are the ones that are at the class table and you say, "You know, does anyone have a question?" Boink! They always have a question because they love to talk. And that's the way they learn. That's one of the things you need to recognize about your students. No one learns only one of those four ways, but most of us do have a preferred method. Figure out what that is with your children and use that. It's a reality.
So then with the one that likes to talk, you have him tell you what he learned from the class the other day? Is that what you're saying?
The one who likes to talk will love if you ask him a question that he can answer and show everyone else just how beautifully he can word it and so on. They love that interaction at the class table, and the others are there rolling their eyes. There he goes again. You know, but it's okay. They can be patient until they get to go to the board if that's what they love to do. if he gets to go ahead and talk a little bit, or she, maybe more likely. Anyway, use objects. Jesus did. Something as simple as a penny. He used a child, a fig tree, a well, lilies, a stone. Said, you don't cry out, the stones are going to start singing. Use food. One of the things that is a part of a number of teaching programs in the lower grades is different types of dough, pretzel dough. And it's wonderful. The child makes an egg, sticks it in the oven, bakes it. And once they get to where they actually supposedly know what that thing, what sound it makes, then they get to eat it. And then it's internalized. Right? And you can use Reese's Pieces, M&Ms for all sorts of counting, math exercises. And then they conquer it and they get to eat it. I love using bananas to teach fractions. My students believe that fractions taste like bananas. You can use Hershey's bars to teach fractions or Kit Kats. The bigger Kit Kats come in fourths already. So if you're teaching fourths, that's cheap help. And you're engaging the student's sense of smell and taste when you do those things. Use three-dimensional letters. If we're trying to teach someone that says cat, even just using wooden blocks is more powerful than writing the words on the board. Or Scrabble tile. This was an idea. It's not. Many of these ideas, by the way, are not original with me, but you can hand the student a few Scrabble tiles. Can you make a word with that? And so on. And it has texture. It has weight. It's more than just, thank you. Ape. That's what she's been looking at for the last 40 minutes. All right. Thank you. And what was that about self-degrading stuff? Anyway, magnetic letters. Students love playing with magnetic letters at a very young age. Once again, you're dealing with weight. You're dealing with something that has a little bit of thickness. It's not just black and white flat. Right? You're taking it above those things. Play-Doh is extremely useful. A second cousin of my wife's, or mine by marriage or whatever, was having trouble in third grade. I told his mom and dad he's got to use Play-Doh. And his dad started drawing words and gravel in front of their house every evening when he got home from work. The boy started getting his reading done. It's that simple. It's just pretty cheap learning, right? But it's three-dimensional. Once again, it has weight, texture, a smell, right? Play-Doh smells kind of salty, musty, whatever it is. Anyway, but you're using more than one gate to get into that child's mind. Once again, things that are talking about texture. Let students make letters with Legos. If I can do this right. You have them build an L, more or less. But they can feel how this thing is put together. And it's, again, it's got weight. It's more than just flat, black, and white. We must take many of these students out of that mode. Use visual aids. Jesus wrote on the ground. Jesus used the similitudes. If you can't use these things in your classroom at the moment, at least use figurative language. Well, it's like an S is like a snake, rather than it's a wiggly line, and so on. Use the board. Use mnemonics. For example, when I'm teaching my students distance, rate, and time, I say, if you have the distance, you divide, and it's the dividend. It usually soaks in after 4 years or so of hearing that. Use color. Once again, please graduate from black and white flat things. Krista, you're my co-teacher from last year, started doing this with a student we had, and suddenly the facts became attainable. The difference was not the fact, the difference was not the teacher, the difference was the color on the board. That was the main difference. Am I relating that correctly? And I typically do that without thinking. It comes naturally to me. I'm very happy that other people are able to use that. And with these students, never ever assume that they know something. I have so often made a fool of the teacher, myself, by assuming that they knew what I was talking about. And I get done talking, and they said, "Why was Don in his bedroom?" "What?" "Well, you said he donned his clothes." "Was the sun coming up?" Yeah, we cannot assume that they knew because I know, or because I knew at your age that this is like this, or surely you know that a dairy farm has vacuum pumps on it. Whatever. Do not assume that they know anything. Use your imagination. Jesus used his imagination to teach people. So we might say, what if there was a secret tincture that we could give Jonathan? And suddenly his hair would turn orange and it would grow at a rate of 3 inches per minute. How long would his hair be in 5 minutes? It's okay. Maybe that's a little wild, but sometimes the wilder the story, the more the students are engaged in it. If your house was full of a million mice, but if you put a cat in there and it could eat 10 mice a day, how many days would it take? Get all the mice. Use visual aids. Again, let them see things. Use actions. Jesus used foot washing. Was it Mervyn who talked about that the other day? Action. If you do this, you're happy. Communion. It's an action. Let them move their hands and feet. It used to bother me when some of these children would, their pencil was all over the place in the air, and suddenly it would come down and start writing. Anymore, I get to where I know some of my students that some of them have to be in motion or nothing's going on up here. Use sayings, jingles, rhymes, a song. Remember that a bigger memory is a better memory. Use hand motions. Someone showed me with the whole right and left thing that I can only make an L. Of course, I have to turn around so you can see this. I can only make an L with my left hand if I stick it out in front of me. Works. Hand motions can be very useful. I know some people say that saying larger to smaller multiply, smaller to larger divide is a horrible thing to do. Not for these children, okay? They need hand motions. They need something big to grab a hold of. Who was using hand motions just shortly ago to keep a bunch of people together?
Steve.
Yes. She's using hand motions. In his case, it's not just his hands that are moving. He's got this wave-like motion that you can just right with him. Use focus exercises. I mentioned to someone the other day the Davis method. So the Davis method uses a number of these. One of them is the dial concept. I actually found this very powerful for myself. And that is that I have an energy dial on the side of my head, right? And I can crank it up and be all excited and bouncy. And this is the person that I should be when it's recess time and everything. But then I have a problem when I come in and I'm supposed to be here working on my lesson. And the energy's all over the place. But I can control this thing. I can turn it back. I'm in control of the dial on the side of my head. And a special ed teacher told me that he actually had one of his students who, when they were out at recess time and he was losing control of himself and just yelling and screaming and running and randomly doing crazy things, he could catch his eye and just go. And the boy would reach up and go. And he was fine. It was that easy. The idea that there is a laser pointer attached to my eyes, and whatever that thing is on, that's what I'm thinking about right now. And so I have to be careful where that thing's going. I mean, that's what I was supposed to be doing. Good. Okay. It's powerful. For some of these children, that vision, they can visualize very easily, many of them. Along with that in the Davis method is, what would I see if I was standing right behind me looking right past my head? And that's part of that same thing. If I was they can actually picture themselves behind themselves more easily than they can in themselves. If that works, then that's okay. Another interesting thing with a focus exercise is an add one exercise. We're going to do that very quickly. I will say a letter, and you can say any letter or number. And then we start over, we say that one, and the next one, and then we have to add one every time. Okay, ready? So A.
A.
Yes, good. A. You all say A. Somebody else add one.
D.
Okay. A, D.
Five.
A, D, five.
Seven.
A, D, five, seven.
H.
A, D, five, seven, H.
L.
A, D, five, seven, H, L. See how that is? We start with something easy. Anybody can do this. But what we're doing is we're increasing that amount of time these people can focus. It's powerful. Right? Another game that I enjoy playing with my students, even the fast ones like this, is the game of stop. All right? So you can just do this with anyone. You can count to 100, have them recite a Bible passage. And here's the way it works. When I say stop, you stop, and I will point my finger at any person in this room, and you have to be ready to go. All right? So I will have Danielle here start counting from one and just count up. Okay? And count fast. Don't be slow. So go ahead.
Out loud.
Out loud. Very loud, please.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Stop!
6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Stop!
12, 13, 14, 15.
Stop! We got her! See, nobody can be snoozy. Everybody's in because you don't know who's going to get nailed next. Right? I love it. All right. We're over time. I'm very, very sorry about that. Do you have any questions or comments before I dismiss you?
All kinds.
Do you have my phone number? Please do call me. I do enjoy hearing from teachers. Just be aware that my wife will make me schedule time so that she gets to talk to me too.